Welcome to the podcast of this Brecan information session. Information sessions are recorded at the Brecan Resource Centre and can be borrowed in CD format from the Resource Library. Sessions are copyrighted and are for personal home use only. If you would like to know more about this and other sessions, please contact Brecan on 1300 781 500. We hope you enjoy this podcast. This session was recorded on the 30th of September 2010 at Brecan's Resource Centre, located in Melbourne's CBD. A cancer diagnosis is difficult enough, but factor in a family history of breast or ovarian cancer and the issues and complexities increase significantly. In this session, Mary-Anne Young, a genetics counsellor with the Familial Cancer Centre at Peter Mac, talks about the role of the centre, its innovative projects and the support available to people faced with a family history of cancer. We hope you enjoy this session, what it means to have a family history of cancer.
Thanks for the opportunity to come and speak to you this morning.
Yeah, and I hear that a lot of you have come from the country, so well done. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've come because of a personal interest, and if you have, I'm happy to help you with any questions you have about your own personal situation or your family history. And I've also got some handouts at the end that you could take away if you want to have a look at how we assess the risk of cancer in a family, so you can take that home and look at your own family history. So I'm a genetic counsellor. I work at Peter Mac. We have a centre there called the Familial Cancer Centre, where we look at people's family histories of primarily breast cancer, but also other types of cancer. And you'll see I've put up there, what does it mean to have a personal or family history of breast and gynecological cancer? Because we also see quite a lot of women who've had gynecological cancers who wish to know, could there be some sort of genetic predisposition. Can I just ask, and this might be a bit personal, you don't have to put your hand up if you don't want to, but how many of you actually, as well as having had breast cancer, have a family history? And I hear I'm allowed to draw on my friend. And it's actually been to our centre. And as we have information about Annette's family history, and we spoke to her about what we thought the likelihood of there being a genetic predisposition. So at some stage, I might ask you to tell a little bit about your experience as a patient or a consumer of the service, what it looks like for you. I'll just go through and give you some information first. Okay, so I thought I'd talk to you today about how do we know what's the difference between what we call sporadic cancer. So sporadic cancer is one of those cancers that, as women, we're all at risk of, and one of those cancers is actually breast cancer. So we know that as women, that we all have a risk, one day we might get breast cancer, and that risk increases as we get a bit older, particularly after menopause. But we also know that some women get breast cancer at a younger age, and it's just a one-off thing in their family, and they don't have a family history, and it's not likely there's going to be some sort of genetic susceptibility. So I thought I'd just highlight a little bit about the science. I'll do it in as easy terms as I can. And what's the difference between what we call sporadic cancer and a familial cancer? And then look at how common is it to have an inherited predisposition. So when we talk about an inherited predisposition, many of the families we see have one gene that's been passed down through the generations, either through their mother or father, that's causing an increased risk of particular types of cancer. And I'll show you some family histories as we go on. How do we actually assess what the genetic risk in a family is? And I'll show you how we do that. How do we then, it's fine to say that there's an increased risk, but then you actually need to manage it. So for people who we assess that there is an increased risk, what do we do about that? And then I thought I'd talk to you about genetic testing, because I think there's a bit of a myth out there. You can just walk in off the street and have a genetic test to see if you've got a gene for breast cancer, and it's actually quite complicated and nowhere near as easy as that. You can do it if you pay, but you have to pay a lot of money. Okay, so I just thought I'd take you through some very basic science for you all. So we know that the reason cancer arises is that you get these genetic alterations, and they're called mutations. And what happens is you get an accumulation of them in several genes of one cell in your body, okay? We know that all cancers are genetic,
but only about 5% of cancers are due to the inheritance of one of those genes. So the people I work with are people in the minority. Okay, only a very small proportion of people do we find some of these genes in. Okay, so this is where, hopefully, this will bring it all together for you. So we're going to go back right to conception. Okay, so at conception, this is the sperm, and this is the egg, and this is what we're going to talk about as sporadic cancer. So this is sort of, I don't mean to be demeaning in the terms I use, but this is a common garden variety cancer. Breast, bowel, you know, all those other types of cancer. One. So what happens is, when that baby's conceived, all its genes are fine. It doesn't have any alterations that give it an increased risk for cancer. And what happens is, when that first cell comes together, the cell faithfully divides and copies all the genetic material in the cell before. So it just divides and copies, divides and copies, divides and copies. Okay? So you go through your life and then you have just one cell in your breast. Just one. Or one cell in your bowel. Or one cell in your lung. And that cell acquires, for some reason, this genetic change. It then acquires a whole lot more genetic changes, and that cell then starts faithfully dividing and copying the genetic alterations, and that's when you get a sporadic breast cancer. So it's just one cell, okay? It's not all the cells.
Can I just ask,
they're
not
going to
have
ovarian,
the same with ovarian,
it's
a sporadic.
Yeah, what? What being suggested? Yeah. So if it was your ovary, so this is your ovarian, one ovarian cell. That cell, for lots of reasons, acquires these genetic mutations or genetic alterations. They happen in like a cascade event, and then that cell starts faithfully dividing and copying, and then you get a tumour.
Maybe I'm being a bit simple, but I don't quite understand where the first cell is introduced, what stage this mutated cell.
This can be at any stage in your life.
Can it?
Yeah. But you need to have a number of changes for it to become what we call malignant, okay? So,
and they're external factors?
They can be. Yeah. They can be things like, we know there's protective factors and risk factors for breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So some of the protective factors are things like the age, and most of them are uncontrolled, the age you get your period, the age you go through menopause. So the later you get your period, the earlier you go through menopause, the more protected you are against breast cancer, okay? And I said, these are uncontrollable factors. Alcohol. We know that alcohol has a large impact on breast cancer risk in the general population. Weight, exercise, all those sorts of things. Breastfeeding is protective. But look, you can see 10 women who breastfeed for long periods of life who still get breast cancer. So these are what we call risk factors that are small risk factors that can add up. You know, exposure to radiation, all those sorts of things can cause these genetic alterations. And age. Age is a huge factor, and that's why we know that people with cancer is primarily a concern of older people. If we all lived long enough, one day we'd probably get cancer. So it's an age-related thing, all right? So just for Mary and Helen have just come in. We're just talking about the difference between what we call a sporadic cancer, which is the cancers that most people get, versus the families where there's an inherited predisposition. Okay, so this is one cell that acquires these changes and off it goes and becomes a tumour. So what happens in the families that we, the histories in, that we look at, is in some families, what you see is that there's the sperm and there's the egg, and the sperm carries a genetic alteration already. So the man in that family carries a gene causing a predisposition to cancer, and it's in his sperm, and he passes it on to that first cell. Okay? So that child is actually born with a mutation in all of the cells in its body that is going to predispose them to cancer, specific types of cancers. Now you might say, why don't they just get cancer all throughout their body? We don't know. But if this child was a female and this was a breast ovarian cancer predisposition gene, this woman would have a high risk of developing breast and ovarian cancer in her life. If this was a bowel cancer gene and they passed it on to a woman, she'd have a high risk of getting bowel and ovarian and uterine cancer with those particular conditions that we know of. Okay, so that's the difference, basically. A little more complicated than that, but yeah. So if we go through the more common types of cancers up the top here and the rarer ones down here, but we know that about 5 to 10% of women who develop breast cancer, probably more 5%, do so because they inherit a gene from either their mother or their father that lives in the predisposition. And we know that with ovarian cancer, it might actually be a little bit higher than that. We're just doing a big study at the moment in Australia of a whole, about 1,000 women who've developed ovarian cancer to see how many of them carry these genes that we can test for. So ovarian cancer might be 10% and maybe a bit greater. Bowel cancer is another one, where most bowel cancers that occur don't have a hereditary susceptibility, but there are some that do. Prostate cancer, melanoma. Now you can see that these are all really common cancers, that those common sporadic cancers. So it's really important not to just say, I've got a family history of breast cancer, that means there's some sort of genetic susceptibility, because there may not be. And then these other rarer ones, retinoblastoma, that's a tumour in the eye, often in children, that has a high risk of being a genetic susceptibility. Okay.
Has multiple myeloma fallen in plenty of those families? It's not a cancer?
No. It's not one that we see associated with genes that we know can be passed through families causing an increased risk. Yep.
Yes.
But it's a very common cancer in older people. So if you look at this pie chart here, okay, let's say this is all the women who develop breast cancer, okay? So most of them won't have a family history. It'll be a one-off event in their family. They may be younger, but most of them will be older. And it's very unlikely that there's any inherited susceptibility in their family to developing breast cancer. Okay, so you can see that for most women who get breast, ovarian, any sort of gynecological cancer, it's unlikely that there's going to be any increased risk for other people in the family because of some sort of hereditary condition. So that's good news. Then we have two groups here. So these are women who have breast cancer themselves and they also have a family history. Okay? These women here might have one or two relatives with breast cancer. And there may be some sort of genetic explanation for that family history, but it's different from this group here where we know that there's likely to be one single gene being passed through the family. So we call this low risk, call this moderately increased risk, and we call this high risk. And when someone comes to us and we look at their family history, the assessment we make is low, moderate, high. Okay, that's our first assessment. So is it unlikely? Is it possible? Or is it very likely? And that's when at that time sees that's what we do in the next family history.
And the matter with that family history that the genes haven't been found, is that what?
There are some families where there's more cancer than you would expect by chance alone, and it's occurring in younger people, and we test for the genes that we know of and we don't find them. So there's something going on in that family that's clearly genetic, and we're now looking at other genes. We don't know everything.
Yeah.
But
is that what happened in your family? That's what happened.
Yeah.
We had a strong family history. Well, we didn't have a family history of cancer. And then myself, my older sister developed breast cancer under 50. Then I developed breast cancer. Then my younger sister did. Then my older sister had a recurrence. So.
Sorry. We didn't have a family history that we knew of. And my elder sister developed cancer at 44. I developed cancer at 46. My younger sister developed cancer at 49, all breast cancers. And my elder sister developed another cancer in 2007, at 14 years after her original assessment, in 58, when she was diagnosed again with breast cancer. So we went for the genetic testing, and we haven't got the BRCA gene, but they do think that it is a gene, it's just one they haven't identified yet. So we are in the high risk. And we all have daughters, and we all have that conundrum about not knowing what the future means for them.
What happens when you've got three different types of cancer in three sisters? I've had breast cancer, my sister's got lung and liver cancer, and my other sister has got a tumour on the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So and it's all in the last 2 years?
Yep, so like Annette's family, you can see that some families, terrible family history is evolving. But those tumours, just on the surface, don't sound like they're related in any way. But you'd have to just have a little look further at, was your sister's a primary lung cancer? What's the brain tumour your other sister's got? And how old were you when you developed your cancer? And I'll take you through how we look at age, because age is an important thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we call these conditions familial cancer syndromes, and basically all that means is that someone has an inherited susceptibility to develop cancer. And there are bowel cancer syndromes and there are breast cancer syndromes. Okay, and we know that there are genes that can cause an increased risk for bowel cancer, genes that can cause an increased risk for breast cancer, and they're also associated with ovarian cancer. Okay. So I'm going to take you through and explain quite a lot more about that and show you some family histories as well, okay? So how, when we look at a family history, and I said before we either classify it as low, moderate or high, and I mean that's what I've been doing this morning before I come down. I've just been going through people's family histories, and it's like this, it's like a jigsaw puzzle basically, and all those factors I have in my head, and I put the pieces of the puzzle together and come up with, yes, I think that's a high risk family, we need to see them. No, I think they're low risk. We'll talk to them in our telephone clinic. So that's how we do it. We gather all the family history information. We gather information about how many brothers and sisters you've got, how many cancers have occurred in your family, how they're related to you, how old they are, what sort of cancer they've had, and we also try and put pathology information. Because there are some breast cancers that are more likely to be associated with these genes, particular pathology. Okay. So, the first thing we look at in a family history is how many cases of the same type of cancer are you seeing in your family. So, Vivian, if I can use your personal experience, if you came to us and said, I had ovarian cancer, my mum had ovarian cancer, and my mum's sister had ovarian cancer, then we'd be saying, well, we think that's high risk family.
My mum had breast cancer.
Yep. So again, it would be worth looking at that because potentially not
definitely.
Yeah, not definitely, potentially. Okay. So yeah, how many people in the family? So if you've got 10, if you see 10 sisters and two of them have had breast cancer, 8 of them haven't. So you've got to also remember about family size. So if you've got 2 sisters out of 10 who've had breast cancer, it could just be bad luck they're related to one another. And they're those chance breast cancers that we're all at risk of. So you have to, when you see a family history, you have to be careful not to immediately say there's some sort of genetic susceptibility. Right? So that's what we do. We try and sort of tease it all out. Are you seeing any what we call cancer clusters in the family? So are you actually seeing people with breast cancer and ovarian cancer in the same person? Or are you seeing a family history? So a mother and daughter, or mother and sister with breast or ovarian cancer. With the
Where does metastatic breast cancer
beg your pardon?
Metastatic breast cancer fall in there amongst that group?
Basically, metastatic breast cancer comes from a primary breast cancer, so that's important for us to know if the person has metastatic breast cancer. It's not so relevant in our assessment. It's more about how we might need to think about that, seeing that person, if they're well or not well, or where they're up to in their treatment and things like that. Is that okay?
Yes, I just wondered because my mother had breast cancer, my father had multiple myeloma, and I have metastatic breast cancer, which is in my bones and my breast.
Yep.
So I wondered whether there was any family connection there.
There could be between your mother and you, not the multiple myeloma, put that right away.
No.
So, but it would be important, it still could be that you and your mother have developed breast cancer by chance alone.
Yes, I know it's going down to my daughter now too. She yes. also has breast cancer.
Your daughter has breast cancer. Mm.
So
okay.
It's three generations.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, we'd be thinking that's a high risk situation. Yeah. So, sorry, I'm giving all these people risk assessments here, but I thought that's why you might have come.
Yeah.
Yes. So, I hope you don't mind sharing, but yeah, that's how it is. So, there's another condition, and I talked about gynecological cancers, so there's another genetic condition that causes primarily an increased risk of bowel cancer, so that's colorectal cancer, just for the abbreviation, but it also causes quite a high risk of women to get uterine cancer and ovarian cancer. So if you're seeing a family history of bowel and uterine cancer, then we'd start to think about this bowel cancer condition. Okay? The most important thing we look at is how old are people when they're getting the cancer, right? If we're seeing people, and Liz Rolfe, if you do look like a government, okay? Yeah. If we're seeing many people in the young people in the family getting cancer, so if we're seeing lots of 30 and 40 year old women getting cancer, and like in Annette's family, most of us, you're all under 50. So that's on the young side. So we tend to use 50 as a bit of a cutoff. So if we were seeing, again, like, you know, if Annette had come to us and three sisters had developed breast cancer in their 80s, we'd be saying, oh, it's probably just more likely that you're all getting older and you've all got breast cancer. It could be some sort of little genetic factor in your family that we're not thinking about, one of these big genes that we know of. So age is an important thing. And then we're looking at people who might have had, unfortunately, more than one cancer. So anyone who's had what we call bilateral breast cancer, which is a breast cancer in both breasts, not spread from one side to the other, an actual new primary in each breast.
It just occurred to me then, my mother apparently had that. She had breast cancer in two instances and had a mastectomy each time. I had breast cancer and 5.5 weeks later I had the ovarian one. So I actually had all two primaries. So I had them at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and they said to me at Monash it's almost certainly high risk.
Right.
But it's not going to be risk, is that right?
It could be, yeah. So, yeah.
And I have two daughters.
Right. I mean, as you can see, this actually brings up quite a lot of questions, and particularly about your children and what can be done. But there are things that can be done, okay? So it's easy for me to stand here and sound terribly reassuring. I'm not in your shoes, but there are things for your children that we can actually assist with, okay? So that's the most important thing. And as Annette said, you know, there's lots of girls in their next generation. So we help with getting early screening started and early checkups for families where we think there's an increased risk. Okay. So it's fine to say, yes, I've looked at your family history, which I haven't. We think you're in the high risk group. Thanks very much. See you later. Go home. Hope everything goes well. No, that's only half of what we do. We say, yes, we do think there might be an increased risk in your family. We notice you've got daughters. When they reach the age of 30, 35, they need to go and see a breast specialist and they need to start thinking about their first mammogram much earlier than the youngest woman. So we would make recommendations. When someone comes to see us, we think of the family as being our patient, not just the person in front of us. And we've got some brochures. I'll tell you about where all our centres are. And we've got some brochures. If you felt after this you wanted to talk to someone, just ring and we'll take you through it. Okay? And we have clinics in the country, so, you know, it doesn't mean you all have to come down to Melbourne. Okay. Okay, so how do we assess cancer risk? Basically, family history is the major thing that we look at. So if someone comes to see us, we ask them to fill out a family history questionnaire. So, have you done that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It takes hours.
Oh, gosh. So, I'm 31 and have got breast cancer, and no one in my immediate family has cancer. And because I'm under 35, I understand that's kind of the trigger point. They automatically refer me for genetic counselling. And, the family history was just ringing up, like, you know, second cousins asking about their cancer. It was actually quite an amazing process for me. So we did try and get a pretty comprehensive picture of any cancer that comes to the family, not just those that they might need, but it did take hours. And for one, in one instance, I had to ring my husband because she had passed away, who had the cancer, and he'd remarried. It was a very incredibly personal thing. I've never met him. He lives in the States, talking to him about his wife who had cancer. So, but it did take hours to put pieces together of the puzzle. And as you say, you can get to do like the type of cancer, where they were diagnosed, when it was, their age. Yeah, so it did take quite a bit of time. But I don't have the gene mutation, so
yeah. Some of us don't know our family history.
I don't know either, but some of us don't know.
Yeah,
no, I don't know either. So we cover all the time just by ringing, like, you know, so. My family's quite big, so I'm sure we didn't get the whole picture, but, you know, bringing, you know, aunties and uncles and then kind of different cousins and all kinds of things that the family all get connected. But, you know, through that process, I said, oh, did you know that Bruce also had prostate cancer? And I was like, oh, no, who's Bruce? So, yeah, I said, our family's not, our immediate family's very close, but the different family's not included.
And I think, as you said, a lot of people don't know about their family history for lots of different reasons. So we it's just one tool that we use, okay? And we also use pathology information, okay? So just from history, if I can allude to you. So we know that young women who develop what we call a grade 3 triple negative breast cancer, so when the pathologist looks down the microscope, when they've taken the tumour out, they give it all this categorisation. And that helps in working out what treatment women might have. So whether you have to have chemotherapy or radiotherapy or tamoxifen or no tamoxifen. So they give what's called a grade. That's the first thing. So women who have what we call grade 3, there's either grade 1, grade 2 or grade 3. So women who have a grade 3, they look at what we call the hormone status, so the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, and the HER2 status, which is Herceptin. So women who have grade 3, negative estrogen, negative progesterone and negative HER2, and they're young, that can be an indication that there might be one of those genes in the family. So we also look at that information.
Yeah, grade 3 is a hormone
status. So if you came to see us, what we talk about is what's the chance that in your family there's some sort of genetic susceptibility, and could it be one of those genes that we know of and can test for? But then what's the risk for people in your family of developing cancer? So, as I said, we don't just say, yes, we think there's a gene in your family, hope it goes well. We then talk about, well, for your daughters, we think their risk is increased, it's increased by this much, and we think that they should be doing this. And we'll help you get that organised. Okay? And we help communicate in families because, you know, as Melissa said, families move overseas, some families have fallout. It's not uncommon for families to fall out. So we can help communicate that information through the family as well. Okay, so to do all this, we need to collect the family history. And as Melissa said, that can be somewhat burdensome and take a lot of time. A lot of people know a lot about their family history, but many don't. We actually, what we call, verify the cancers in the family. And the way we do that is we get your family history and we send it to the Cancer Council of Victoria and they cross-check it and they send it back to us and they give us pathology information. Now you might think, wow, how can they do that? When a cancer's diagnosed, it's a reportable condition. So when your cancer's developed, it had to be reported what cancer you had to the Cancer Council of Victoria. And that's how they keep statistics on the number of women who get breast cancer each year and how old they are. So you might not know this, but there'll be a report of your pathology which is located in the Cancer Council, which is kept under very strict confidentiality and privacy, and with a consent form signed by you, where I have to send your family history over and they cross-check it for us.
How far back in the family history would that go? Because the Cancer Council has only three generations maximum.
It's only back to the 1960s.
Yeah.
The other thing we do is we get death certificates, so we've got lots of records we can look up.
Oh, yes.
And if all we've got is what the family reports, that's what we have to go on. Okay. And as I said before, we assess the family as either being what we call average risk, moderate risk or high risk. So average risk, moderate risk or high risk. Okay, I'm going to talk about this condition now. This is this bowel cancer condition. So this is a condition called Lynch syndrome. Don't worry about this. People give them the most shocking names. Lynch syndrome or hereditary non-polyposis colorectal cancer. And it's a condition which is caused by the inheritance of a single cancer susceptibility gene. People who have this condition called Lynch syndrome have a risk of all of these types of cancers, and this is the risk, which is high. Okay? So you can see before, if I'm looking at a family history, and I'm going to show you a family history where it's very evident that this condition is present. There are some families that even you could look at and say, wow, there's something happening here that's not sort of bad luck. If you inherit this gene for Lynch syndrome, your risk of bowel cancer over your lifetime, okay, the whole of your lifetime, could be as high as 80%. Okay, but we know that by having regular colonoscopies in this condition, you can reduce that risk very significantly. There's a risk of uterine cancer. There's a risk of ovarian cancer, and those risks are significantly increased compared to the average woman. Okay, so the average woman's risk for ovarian cancer is less than 1%. So these women have a tenfold increased risk. And there's a risk of these smaller type cancers as well. Okay? Okay, so I thought I'd show you some family histories and so we can go through and assess. So circles are for women, squares are for men. That means they're married and these are their children. Okay? So this is four generations on both sides. This woman came to see us because she had ovarian cancer when she was 60, and she doesn't have a family history of any other cancers in her family. So we would be saying that it's more likely that there's not a genetic susceptibility in her family. Okay? More likely. And we'd think that her daughter may have a slightly increased risk of ovarian cancer, but not very high. Okay? So we would call that average risk. So this woman's got ovarian cancer at 50, which is just slightly on the young side to have ovarian cancer. Most ovarian cancers develop in the 60s and 70s. But she's got four sisters who haven't had any sort of cancer. Okay? And we try and get more information, but we extend it out. But basically, we wouldn't be so concerned about that family history. Slightly on the young side, but we wouldn't be too concerned. But then she rings back and tells us that actually she's got a bit more information about her family history. So this is the woman here who's ringing us up. She's worried because her mum had ovarian cancer at 65. Her auntie had uterine cancer at 60. And there's another lady up here who's her grandmother who had uterine cancer at 50. So you can see, you're just starting to see a bit of a picture emerge there of a young woman with uterine cancer. Another uterine cancer here and an ovarian cancer, which could mean this condition called Lynch syndrome is present. Okay, could, may not. Again, might just be bad luck that these three people are all in the same family. So we would think about, that maybe we could do some testing in that family to try and help clarify. Okay, this is a family where, you don't have to be a scientist to work this one out. Okay, I'll tell you the story. This is a lady who came to see us many years ago, and her question was, I want to know whether I need to keep having these wretched colonoscopies, because I have to have them every year, and they absolutely drive me demented. And I need you to tell me, based on my family history, whether I can stop having them, because I don't think I want to have them anymore. So, okay, we said, what's your family history? So, here we go. One, two, three generations. So she said, my sister developed bowel cancer when she was 21. My dad developed bowel cancer when he was 48. His brother developed bowel cancer at 53. And prior to that, he'd had a cancer of the ureter, which is the tube connecting the kidney to the bladder. Their sister developed bowel cancer at 48. Another brother developed bowel cancer at 30. And this sister had a brain cancer at 48 and a uterine cancer at 56. And then if you go down here, this fellow's son had had bowel cancer at 34. And then if you went up here, and if you went over here, there was like another four pages of this. So, what are the things that stand out? I'll give you a little test. What are the things that are standing out with that?
I'm
having
a family history.
Yeah, they're young. And there's a lot of And we're seeing this cluster, bowel, the brain, the ureteric, there's this cluster of young people getting cancer. Okay? So, well, first of all, we said, well, no, you can't stop having those colonoscopies. No way. They're really important and you need to have them every year.
Amazing she asked.
Oh, she's been having them all for me, really sick of them.
Oh, they're awful. I had them too, but I think
so. I'll tell you some more about this family, because in the end, we were able to tell her she could stop having colonoscopies, but when we get onto genetic testing, I'll tell you about that. So we could tell her that she could stop. But you can see that is a very striking family history of cancer. Very striking. Okay? And we would immediately think that this condition is present. It's, yeah, absolutely certain we think it's present. So what can you do if you have an increased risk of this condition called Lynch syndrome? Well, basically we call that high risk, and you need to have regular colonoscopies, which is 1 to 2 yearly, and also gynecological screening. Okay? If your average risk for bowel and ovarian cancer and uterine cancer, average risk now for bowel cancer is that you have this fecal occult blood testing when you turn the age of 50. So I don't know if any of you have actually had that. The GP might organise that for you. Yeah, they do. I've just turned 50. Yeah, so whereas we know that average for breast cancer is having a mammogram every 2 years from the time you turn 50. So this is my big year. For moderate risk, we would suggest people have a colonoscopy probably every 3 to 5 years, and for high risk in this condition, they have a colonoscopy every 1 to 2 years. Okay, now we'll talk about breast and ovarian cancer, which I sense is probably something that you're thinking more about. Okay, so we know, as I said before, that 5 to 10% of women who develop breast or ovarian cancer do so because they inherit a gene from either their mother or their father that causes them to have an increased risk, and that's why they develop these cancers. And currently, we know of two genes, and it's called breast cancer gene 1 and breast cancer gene 2, and people refer to them as lots of different things. We call them BRCA1 and 2, BRCA1, BRCA2, BRCA genes, that's what it means. And you know how I showed you that chart before with high risk? In the families we test, in about 40 to 50% of them, we find a BRCA1 or 2 gene mutation. So it means there's a lot of families we're not finding, like MX, but clearly there's some sort of genetic predisposition, but there's other genes that may be causing those predispositions, and we still are yet to understand that.
Can I ask a good question?
Yeah.
My father died with cancer. In World War One, he had a piece of shrapnel in his back, and it would have been, they couldn't operate and take it out, and that caused cancer. Now, would he have been carrying a gene in his body that caused that cancer?
Probably not, no. But depending on what sort of cancer it was, it would be important to understand what the cancer was.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering, because now we're finding out that each of us, my two sisters and myself, have got cancer later in life. So,
yeah.
And I was just wondering.
It's probably less likely that he had a gene that was passed on to you, but it just would be important to look at the family history in a bit more detail.
Yeah.
So we know that women who have inherited one of these BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene alterations, these are their risks of developing breast and ovarian cancer, and then for males. So I'll go through it. So we know that a woman who inherits a BRCA1 gene alteration over her lifetime has about a 50 to 80% risk that she'll develop breast cancer. Now, I don't know how you see that, but I reckon it's high. So, you know, you'll probably hear on the radio or the news or read in the Woman's Weekly about women who have their breast tissue removed preventatively. Okay? These are the women that do that.
Yeah.
And they have a high risk. And it's the only thing that can give some women peace of mind.
I've always wondered if you have your breasts removed because you're in the high risk category, whether you can still get breast cancer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes,
you can. Yep. Doesn't take your respect to
zero. Is there a percentage on that? Or?
Yeah, it's less than the average in the juice, so it's less than 5%. Mm-hmm. And do you know why? Because you can't remove every breast cell. Mm-hmm. There are cells I can't see. Occasionally one of those can cause a problem. But it's looking very rare.
Yeah, I just like them.
So, and these women also have an increased risk of ovarian cancer, which is, again, high. So, the recommendations for women in this group is that they can either have regular breast screening, and most of them in Australia choose to have regular breast screening. Some of them choose to have their breast tissue removed. But in this group, we would be strongly recommending they have their ovaries removed, okay? We know that the screening for ovarian cancer is not good. Right. It misses things, it picks up things that aren't ovarian cancer, and it misses too much. So our recommendations are now, if women are known to carry one of these genes, when they've finished having their family and they're approaching their 40s, they actually have them removed.
What are the implications for having them over at
the moment? You're going to immediate menopause if you're not already going to menopause from chemo or just age.
So then it's the same consequence.
Yes, it's a bone density and things like that.
The thing about having your ovaries removed before menopause if you carry one of these genes is, as well as reducing your ovarian cancer risk, taking the ovaries out
reduces the breast cancer risk, so there's something called hormone going on. So if you take a woman's ovaries out before she goes through menopause, as well as reducing the risk of ovarian cancer, it actually halves the breast cancer. So it has a double benefit. Now, it's easy for me to say, have your ovaries removed, you know, before you go through menopause. Some women experience quite difficult menopausal symptoms, and that's why we keep in touch. Some women have very few menopausal symptoms. Very few. It doesn't affect everybody in the same way. Okay. Now, with BRCA2, the breast cancer risk is similar to BRCA1. The ovarian cancer risk is slightly less, but it's still high. And with BRCA2, we can see in some families that men get breast cancer. Okay, breast cancer is not common in men, but it does occur. And to us, when we see a family history of women with breast cancer and a man with breast cancer, we would start to think about this gene, BRCA2. Also, you can see prostate cancer, but we know that prostate cancer is incredibly common in men as they get older, like breast cancer is in women. So we just have to be a bit careful about the prostate cancer. Okay. I'll take you through some more scenarios. So this lady, say one of your daughters, rings our clinic and she says, come into Dan, you're right. That's okay. And she calls me up and she says, I'm actually worried about my risk of developing breast cancer because my mum got breast cancer when she was 60. So I would ask her a little bit about, does she have any other family history of breast cancer, and she says no. Okay. And I would say to her, well, I wouldn't think that your risk of breast cancer is really very much different from the average woman. It might be slightly increased, but not terribly much different. Okay. And for that reason, I think you should just have mammograms when you turn 50.
Can I just add the grandmother as well? That's my case.
So I'll do
the grandmother.
Next slide,
I'll do that.
Okay, thank you. Oh, seriously. Often avoided. Okay. Okay,
so she calls back. She's found out more.
Okay. So she calls back and she says, I've just found out my mum got breast cancer at 65 and my grandmum got it at 50. Okay. So the first thing is, it's just a bit young, but there's four women here having their breast cancer. So family size is important. But, yeah, and you can understand when your mother and your grandmother have had breast cancer, you think you're next because you're the next in line. That sort of, you know, going from generation to generation. So we would suggest that this woman, yeah, she does have an increased risk of breast cancer, but it's not as high as where there's one of these genes present in the family. Okay, and we call this a moderately increased risk.
And that person wouldn't suggest genetic testing?
Not necessarily.
Not perhaps.
we just want to have a look at the pathology of those breast cancers.
Yeah. But no, not strongly indicated. No.
So, and we'd suggest to her that she start mammograms from 40, okay? Not 50, 40, every 2 years. So not a lot different from the average woman, but a little bit different. Okay, so this woman, another woman, I've heard this in some woman, she rings up and says, I'm worried about my family history. My sister had breast cancer at 37, my mum had breast cancer at 50, my auntie had breast cancer at 36, and my cousin's got ovarian cancer at 45. What do you think?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. See?
It's very obvious.
Okay. Yes, there is something clearly genetic in this family, inherited. So what we'd be thinking is that either the grandmother or the grandfather carried a gene which they definitely passed to this woman and was definitely passed to this person, and we don't know if this woman's inherited or not. Okay, so this would be a family where we'd try and find one of these genes. Okay, and we would also be suggesting that this lady have regular early breast screening and have her ovaries out when she's finished having her family, and all those people would be included as well. Okay, this is another lady I saw many, many years ago, and this shows you sometimes that you don't have to have a family history. So you can see there's only two people coloured in here. But let me tell you about her own personal experience, which is a family history in itself. She first had breast cancer when she was 37, and she developed a second breast cancer in the other breast when she was 56. And when she turned 57, she got ovarian cancer. Okay, so in herself, she has had the cancers that we would be thinking, yes, there's some sort of genetic susceptibility in the family. And she said she had a cousin who had breast cancer at 45. But you know the remarkable thing, and I'll tell you the rest of the story, is that, you know, if you think about the people who relate these two women together, are both women, and they haven't had cancer. So it's her mother and her auntie that relate them. I'll tell you what happened. We found a gene in her. Her mother developed cancer when she was about 80, breast cancer. And this woman never developed cancer. Because when you have these genes, you have an increased risk. It doesn't necessarily mean you will. And yes, but unfortunately she went on and got breast cancer after. So, what can you do if you have an increased risk? Well, average risk, which is not increased, is that we have mammograms from 2 years when we're 50. That's what's the recommendation for all women. Okay? Women in the moderately increased risk group, which sounds more like your situation, Sarah, is that women have mammograms from 40 every 2 years, and breastgram will do those for free. Okay? Women in the high risk group, which is women like in the Nets family, we would be looking at things like lifestyle factors. So we would be talking about usage of alcohol, weight, exercise, all those things that, you know, we all do so easily, look after ourselves, the hardest things to do, I reckon. We talk about breast screening, so breast self-awareness, so if they notice any changes in their breast at any time, to have a good GP that they know they can go to and say, look, I've got this lump, I don't know what it is, can you help me with it? I may be overcalling it, but just can you help me sort it out? We'd recommend that a breast specialist do a clinical breast examination every 6 months, so that's like a breast surgeon. We'd recommend that they have a mammogram every year, and for some women now under 50 who carry these genes, they can have what's called a breast MRI. Okay? So there's a specific category of women who can have a Medicare-funded breast MRI. And we know that MRI in these women is good at picking up these small, small tumours. And as I said before, there are a group of women who consider having their healthy breast tissue removed as a preventative option. And while for some people that sounds shocking, for these women it is the right thing to do. Okay? If you've seen a lot of women in your family who have not had good experiences with breast cancer, and who died from breast cancer, and you don't want the same thing to happen to you, then having your breasts removed preventatively is an option. Okay. And for many of them, it brings them, those that have it done, it brings them peace of mind that they haven't had for a long time. And as I said before, we know that these genes can cause an increased risk of ovarian cancer. And for women who we know carry one of these genes, we'd recommend they have their ovaries removed when they finish having their family. Okay. So I know this all sounds very, very dramatic, but remember, only a small proportion of women carry these genes. Okay, so we've got to take it back. And yes, this is a lot, but for most women, this is not their situation. Most women are in this situation. Okay. Okay. I just want to talk about genetic testing, and then I'll hopefully finish up soon because I've been talking for a while. As I said before, you can't just walk in off the street. Well, you can. If you go to a private laboratory, right, you can walk in off the street, put your arm out, pay them $2,500, and they'll do a test to see whether you carry one of these BRCA1 or 2 genes. Okay? So how many of us have got to spend $2,500? Not me. So in the public sector, where we work, we do genetic testing for free in families where we think it's appropriate to do testing. Like Annette's family, we offered testing to because we felt that the family history. Melissa had testing offered to her.
It was offered to me too.
Yeah. Vivian, Sarah, you might come and we might not offer it to you.
But if, what about the pathology guys?
We can put all of that and then we'd say, we'd do a statistical calculation and we'd say that we think the risk of finding a BRCA1 or 2 gene mutation is only 5%.
Yeah.
And we don't think it warrants that test.
But at this point, I've never heard of the genetic testing until it was, you know, oncologists.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't the population.
No. But we get a lot of women ringing up saying, well, my mum had breast cancer, my GP told me to ring you so I can have the gene test for breast cancer. And it's just, it's really not that simple. Okay. So I'm going to take you through and explain genetic testing. I think I'll do that without. Okay. So this is the family I showed you before where they've got this bowel cancer condition, and this is the girl, her question was, can I stop having colonoscopies? Okay? So what we did when we said to her, yes, we think that this family history represents this condition where there's a gene being passed to people, to some people in your family, and those people who inherit the gene have a high risk of developing these types of cancer. So it's possible for us to try and find what that gene looks like in your family. And to do that, we'd need to get a blood sample from either your father or your uncle or your aunt or your cousin. So you need to get a blood sample in the first place from someone who's actually had the cancer. Okay? Because you know that they've had a cancer that's likely to be associated with the gene. So if the gene's going to be there, they're more likely to have it. Okay, so we took a blood sample from her father and we looked in his genetic code to see if we could find this gene, and we found it. Which is not surprising, given the information. So now we know what that gene looks like in him, we can then offer testing to all these people in the family to tell them whether they had or had not inherited the gene. Okay? Just because the gene's there doesn't mean you're necessarily going to inherit it. There are some people who won't. So,
is it 50-50 or?
Yeah. So we tested her and she hadn't inherited the gene from her father. So she didn't need colonoscopies anymore because she wasn't at risk of the condition that was causing the bowel cancer. Okay?
So she was pretty happy.
She's pretty happy, I can tell you. But all of those people could then go on and have testing to tell them whether they had or had not inherited the gene. If they had, they know they've got a high risk and they need to do colonoscopies and other types of screening. If they haven't got the gene, they've sort of escaped the family history, and they don't have to worry. And their children won't have to worry. If you haven't got the gene, you can't pass it on to your children. Okay. This is the lady I was telling you about who unfortunately developed 3 types of cancer. We found one of these BRCA1 genes in her DNA. She inherited from her mother. It was in this side of the family. She had a sister and she also had 2 daughters. We tested both her daughters. Neither of them had inherited the gene, so she was absolutely thrilled. Understandably, her sister unfortunately had inherited the gene, but she then went into a very intensive screening program and was actually quite pleased that she knew that the screening she was having was for a reason. She wasn't sort of doing it not knowing. She knew she was at high risk and she knew that it was important to be having mammograms regularly and to have her ovaries out, and Yeah, she was doing it for a reason. And then we then went through and offered testing to all those people in the family. I might just allow plenty of time for questions. So, if I can just, I know this has probably raised questions for you about your own experiences, and for Vivian and Melissa and Annie, if you've already managed your family cancer centre, you've had some of your questions answered, but like for Annette, with the next generation of women, and Melissa, I don't know if you have children.
I've got nieces and a sister, and it certainly raises a lot of questions for them going through this process. So.
Yeah.
I think also, like my sister's been, I've just had one question. I think also, so I'm low risk because I don't have the gene, there's no family history. But it's also a misunderstanding. So my sister, when she went to her GP, her GP was all alarmist and said, oh, even still, you need to have, you know, mammograms yearly. And, you know, my sister's 37, so he was like, you need to start having them straight away. And, you know, so my sister just went home and cried because she's got three daughters. So I think also it's just a real misunderstanding around the role of genes in cancer. So every single person I say, if I had breast cancer, they say, wow, you know, do you have family history? I'm like, only 5% of cancer due to genetic reasons. And then I was like, wow. But yeah, it's kind of hard in terms of, I think, you know, as soon as there's an unusual case, then GPs and other people can really do that kind of alarm.
Belinda Emmett, over 24.
Big one.
Belinda Emmett.
So you can see that young women can get cancer for reasons that we don't clearly understand, but it's not related to some inherited factor in their family. And, you know, you've had testing for the genes that can be looked at. It's unlikely that your breast cancer arose because there's some gene inherited in another family. This is kind of slightly increased risk, but not high.
Like my daughter, when should she be checked for
ovarian cancer? You really have to have a look at the family history before you can make that recommendation. Because recommendations are made on the basis of what's happened in each family.
But what if someone's adopted and you don't know the history?
It's a very difficult, situation for that person actually, because they don't have the family history information, which shows that the tools that we use to assess risks aren't perfect. We try and do as much as we could with searching for death certificates if they knew any names. Otherwise, we'd look at the pathology of the cancers and just try and work it through. But it is challenging and difficult.
And should someone bother to look into that? I mean, if you, you know, you had breast cancer and you don't know that there could be any factors that may predispose you to ovarian cancer or anything else, should you look into that further or just...
For people who are adopted, many of them can find out about their medical history, their family medical history, without having contact with their adoptive families. Adoptive agencies, adoption agencies will do that. We could look at the pathology of the breast cancer that I'm not sure if it's your personal situation that you've had. There are other ways we can have a think about it. So if you knew your parent, your biological parents' names, we could search for their death certificates and try and track it through that way. But it's difficult to improve that.
Are there implications for
insurance?
I
should go back actually. There we are. It's just taken off and done it all on its own. Okay, so people are concerned about genetic testing having insurance implications. I'll just talk a little bit about genetic testing a bit further. So we know, as I said before, that these genes aren't what we call fully penetrant. So not everybody who carries a cancer susceptibility gene will develop cancer. So there are people in families we see who we can see on genetic testing that they've got the gene, but they've never had cancer. We've got a woman who's 85 who comes to our clinic and I reckon she'll never get cancer. So, and you can tell people, like the woman we told that she didn't have that gene for bowel cancer in her family, doesn't mean that she'll never get bowel cancer, she just goes back to the average person's risk. So by having a genetic test doesn't mean you're going to get cancer. It just means that you're going to a different risk category. And I suppose the other thing I haven't touched on is just some of the psychological issues around genetic testing. Some people are very frightened of this area, and that's understandable because for some people, their experiences haven't been good. You know, I saw a girl the other day, she came with her grandmother. Her mum died from breast cancer when she was only 14, and then her grandmother got ovarian cancer and we found a gene in their family. But, you know, her experience as a young girl at 14 is that she lost her mother, and that's the sort of the dominant story in her head about breast cancer. It's not that it's a condition that, like you all, have had treatment and you all at various stages. Her experience is not that. Okay? And so, you know, when we talk about this thing called genetic counselling, it's something that we spend a lot of time talking to people about, because it's fine just to give people all this information about risk and whatever, but it's really important to understand a little bit about what their experience with cancer has been, and how do you see cancer? Is it something that is treatable, curable? Is it something that, you know, is not? And how do you think about that for yourself? And it can often bring up, you know, looking into your family history can often bring up sadness for people about, you know, people that they've lost. But also there can be some other people who think that information is power, that by knowing this they can actually do something. Okay? So, and then you can have all those feelings together. Whilst you might feel sad about the fact that your mum died from breast cancer when you were young, you don't want your children to have that experience that you had. So you'll do anything in your power to stop it.
And with three generations, grandmother, mother and daughter, the daughter also has a daughter who's now 14. At what age would she be likely to show up any BRCA genes at 14? Or?
So not till 20s. Doesn't cause children to get cancer.
No.
And she's probably already wondering maybe if she's seen her mother, grandmother.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So it's important to remember that everybody has their own personal experience with cancer. And, you know, we see people who haven't had cancer and people who have had cancer, and we talk a lot about what that's been like for them. I'm going to keep going. So these centres... there's one at Peter McCallum, where I work. There's one at the Royal Melbourne Hospital. There's one at Southern Health out in Clayton at Monash Medical Centre. And there's no longer one at the Children's, so I've taken that away. We do clinics in Mildura and Bendigo. We go to Bendigo every month. We go to Mildura every 3 months. The Royal Melbourne does clinics in Geelong, Warrnambool, Ballarat, I think. Monash does sort of Gippsland. So we all have regions that we travel to.
Austin does one at Checkers.
Oh, sorry, the Austin, they're in my yeah. So they're a new, sorry, this is an old slide, I should have updated it. The Austin also has one, and they go to Sheppenham.
Yeah.
So we all have areas that.
And Auburn.
Yes. Sorry, you can see that I'm right with the Austin. But we all have regions, country regions, that we look after. And we travel up there to see people up there rather than them coming. So, if anybody's got questions, we've got brochures about FCCs that you can contact. And I would suggest that you make contact. You can get the information over the phone. Okay, so we have different types of clinics. We have a telephone clinic. So if we don't think that we really need to see someone in person and they need to travel all the way, we'll do it over the phone. So you have an appointment and an allocated time, but you just talk to someone on the phone rather than in person.
Do you need to fill out a form before that? So you don't see anybody. You have to send a form in first and then...
Yeah, and then we do all the work, we do all the homework.
Yeah.
And then we ring you and talk to you about the fact what we think is happening.
So the form, filling out the form and all the information is the first step.
Yeah. So you'll get the forms. Yeah, so as I said, I think it's going to bring up questions for lots of people. Some of you have already been to familial cancer centres. And just give us a ring, okay? Because we're happy to talk through things over the phone with you rather than having... It may be that we don't think it's necessary to fill out the paperwork for you. But yeah, we'd encourage you just to call up with questions, particularly if you've got concerns about your children. So, here we go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. You can subscribe to Brecan Podcasts or browse existing podcasts by visiting www.brecan.org.au.